Welcome to Talking Story. I'm your host, Lynn Hadley, and our guest today is Kit Ketchum, a vibrant member of our community who has served in many capacities, not only as a retired, well, you didn't serve as a retired, you are a Unitarian minister, teacher, Baptist missionary, welfare worker, and many others.
And a guidance counselor.
Guidance counselor, yes. All in great service. And you said you're welcome. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you.
And you said that service was something that was defined early in your life.
Yes. My parents, my dad was a Baptist minister. He also had quite a community presence. He drove buses for migrants, taking them out to the field when we lived out in Eastern Oregon. He was the president of the library board when we lived in Goldendale. He really exemplified public service, and my sister and brother and I have all felt that influence over our lives.
And that started in Eastern Oregon in your childhood?
I was nine years old when we moved to Eastern Oregon. And so I wasn't old enough to do some of the things that were available to do. But as a teenage girl, I joined all a cadre of other teenage girls who were driving trucks in pea harvest and wheat harvest. But that's when I saw my dad step into the void that was created by all the migrant workers who came to town and needed transportation out to the fields. And so he drove a bus. I'm sure he got paid a little bit for it, but he was up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, he'd get me out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning, and we'd go out to the field and come home at 6 o'clock at night, just filthy. But I watched him do that over and over and over again. And my mom, the same way. She was one of these kind old ladies that the hobos used to drive the cat picture on their walls and say, "The kind lady lives here," because my mom was always good for a sandwich, you know, for somebody who came by the back door. So, yes, kind of in my DNA, shall we say.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Which kind of comes to what we were talking about earlier as far as the working class slipping through the cracks.
Mm.
There is very little service offered to them. And we were discussing a New York Times article
mm-hmm.
that was so desperate that it's they labeled it deaths of despair
mm-hmm.
because the people
are not
getting much of what they need.
Yeah. Yeah.
How is that must be a hard thing to address as a service to a congregation where you see that happening. How do you address that?
Well, I've never served a really poor congregation where a lot of people were really in that working class kind of thing. Unitarians tend to be well educated, that kind of thing. But in every community that I've been part of, there has been this sense that there are people we were not seeing. There are people who were on the streets. We didn't know were they camping in the woods. I served on Vashon and Whidbey Islands also, and there's a lot of wooded territory up there. And we'd have kids coming into school who were living in the woods with their parents and at campgrounds, that kind of thing. But you're right. It's like this gap between the haves and the have-nots has just been increasing. And the working class has really kind of taken it in the teeth.
Well, there's so much about the labor versus business policy that the administration, the unions have lost ground
mm-hmm.
and taxes are cut, but in favor of the business,
mm-hmm.
not in favor of the people.
Mm-hmm.
How do we as a part of society address that to help our fellow man and woman?
Well, I think we need to take advantage of every opportunity we see. We talked about this a little bit that at Gail Griffey's funeral a couple of weeks ago, there was this opportunity to bring people, you know, from Astoria and, you know, surrounding areas who were well fed, well educated, clothed, all those kinds of things. But they somehow knew about Gail and they wanted to be there. And there were all Gail's friends who lived on the streets as well. And just by bringing those two groups together and helping them see each other as potential friends possibly, but as neighbors in this community. And I think just by doing that, taking that one little step of making, you know, forming an alliance, a connection between somebody who's very different from us, I think we do something for that person and also for ourselves. And every solution comes out of small building blocks, people trying this, and this to create a pathway between people. I think that's a lot of what we've got going on here is separation of people because we're afraid of each other.
Yes, that fear is not so good, is
no,
it?
No, really slows us down a lot.
And where we could be looking for more spirit, this is, I'm stealing your phrase, spiritual nourishment through connection.
Mm-hmm.
And that can happen anywhere.
It can. Just saying hello to somebody in the grocery store, you know, even if you don't know them. My mother used to do this all the time, and she was really a little chatterbox in a lot of ways. And we'd go to the grocery store, and she'd say, "Oh, I love your blouse! You know, what great shoes!" You know, she could say that. And you know what? When somebody says that to me, I think, "Oh my gosh." Oh, somebody noticed me, and it makes my day when somebody says something nice. And my mother knew this, you know, she knew that made other people feel good when she said something nice to them.
And that's something that you have readily available to give.
Yeah.
You might not have the money
right.
or the food, mm-hmm. but you can give someone a compliment.
Yeah, you can.
And it makes everybody feel better.
Or just say hi to the, you know, the two guys standing on the corner under the, you know, under the overhang, trying to stay dry downtown. Say, hi, guys. You know, you don't have to give them money necessarily unless you want to, but just say, hi, guys. You're treating them as human beings, fellow human beings.
Right.
That's really important.
And it bridges so much, like you
mm-hmm.
were saying.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to be at odds. Oh, that was a point in the article that I really appreciated, is that in...
We're talking about that article about the Knapp family, right?
Right,
in
right.
the New York Times recently. Yeah.
Yes, yes. It's that... where things are so contentious at times mm-hmm. and so extreme that we feel like we can't meet anywhere. Mm-hmm. But maybe what our approach should be reexamined. Maybe if we can start from what's not working, is that, do you think that's maybe a little more neutral territory, that if we can agree on that, we can kind of work out productively or positively from that place?
I would like to think that that's the way it should be, but you know, we're kind of hogtied by the administration that we've got. So I think it really comes down to you and me on the street saying, hi, guys, saying, hey, I love your whatever it is, and making those one-on-one contacts, because we can't do very much about most of the policies that our criminal administration is putting out there, but we can be kind to each other. We can help alleviate some of that distress. You know, when that Knapp family article came out and I saw all those young people who died or had terrible problems, and I'm thinking, where is the school in all of this? Where, you know, the school has a staff who should have, maybe did try, you know, to really meet a kid's needs. And the time that I was a school counselor and teacher, it was a world of difference. I mean, this was in the late 70s and 80s and 90s, and the teaching was a whole different ball of wax then, but the kids' problems were pretty similar. And I remember sitting down with kids and discovering that you know, they had thus and so going on in their lives, which they had not ever let on to anybody, but was creating havoc in their lives in class. And all the teacher could see was the bad behavior. You know, that wasn't the cause. You know, that was an outcome, but it wasn't the real problem. The real problem was maybe the alcoholism at home, or maybe the abuse at home, or something like that. And dealing with those kinds of problems as much as we can, just by making friends with people. I think I loved that time of work as a counselor because kids would confide in me. And I still have Facebook friends who are my junior high students from 30 years ago. And one of them said to me one time, "I don't know how I would have survived if you hadn't listened to me." Who knew?
Wow, listening knew? Can go far,
yeah,
can't it?
Yeah, who knew? Yeah. I'm only now finding out kind of some of that. And we were talking about choking up when, you know, over things that really were important to us. And I can feel myself doing it right now because that is really feels like a legacy in a way. I think we all want to leave a legacy, leave
Absolutely.
Something behind. Yeah.
Yes. And when there's so much that is predetermined for children, I have some statistics here that, you know, your zip code can determine, you know, the trajectory of things.
Mm-hmm. Or it indicates it indicates.
Yes, in an indicator. Or the, just the school district, mm-hmm. if you end up with one that's well-funded versus mm-hmm. one that has no resources, mm-hmm. No
counselor, no music, no whatever. Yeah.
That can determine so much.
Yeah. And a lot of our school policies are so tied to outcomes, and their outcomes are important, but my God, then you're telling teachers to teach to the test, and you're not telling the teacher to teach the child. And that's something we started way even when I was working in the 80s and 90s, that was going on then. And it was just not the right policy. Not at all. We need to change that. We need a real humanitarian administration in power.
It's true, because philanthropy can go so far.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, you're calling on the individual to solve the problem at every turn,
mm-hmm.
which we would all love to be able
sure.
to do that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But it's hard to set in a nationwide drug recovery program mm-hmm. If the politics aren't on board to allow that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's hard to instate that with as an individual or
yeah.
in a group that yeah. would just like to improve things.
Yeah, those kinds of problems for people are the kind of thing that the haves class says, well, you just got to snap out of it, you know, snap out of it. You don't just snap out of that. One of the things that we've discovered, and I've read this recently, is that divorce isn't the problem. Alcoholism isn't so much the problem. It's abuse in the home at an early age. That's what causes a lot of what's going on with our young people who are caught up in addictions and despair. We talked about the despair and how that family just felt they had no place to go, and all those children and no parents who had the ability to step in and change things for them. They were all in the soup, so to speak. Yeah.
Well, and even if you're not in that kind of abusive or uncaring kind of family mm-hmm. setting, if you're not aware of what else exists,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to find an escape from.
Yeah, it really is. And one of the things that I've heard, and I sense that this is really true, that if every teenager had somebody outside his or her family, an adult that he trusted, she trusted, who would contribute their presence to that child's life, that kid would be much more likely to grow up in a healthy way. Parents can't do it all. You know, parents can't do it all. But if each of us, you know, were able to help, you know, say our neighbor or something. And of course, this is just fraught with danger, you know, especially for guys, you know. A man who befriends a child is, you know, do we trust him? But still, I think it's really worth it. It needs to be done. It needs to be done. And the people who are brave enough to do it, I hope will do it in a loving but also healthy way, because that would be a problem.
There is yeah. an aloofness in that fear, though, mm-hmm. of like, oh,
yeah, I don't want to.
Should we interact yeah, with yeah. children if that's
what will
a,
people think?
Yes.
Kind of thing. Yeah, yeah, that's a worry.
So education and just expanding opportunity is a great thing to be able to bring to young people. As well as not just dismissing those adults that have gotten where they've gotten as a result of many possible poor choices or abusive situations, both substance and domestic, possibly. But what can we offer as far as making amends, or there is no simple answer, is there?
There is no simple answer, but interestingly for you to use the word making amends, the phrase making amends, because I found that that's been one of the most useful phrases I've ever used in my own life, and it has changed my life to be able to say to somebody, oh man, I'm sorry. I did the wrong thing. I said the wrong thing, and I'm really sorry I hurt your feelings. You know, it's hard for us adults to say we're sorry to kids. Sometimes I think, you know, we're the boss. We're supposed to be able to just, you know, call the shots and everything. But I found that one of the most useful things that I ever learned how to do as a classroom teacher, as a counselor, as a minister, was to be able to say, "Woo, I blew it. I am really sorry. I wish I had said thus and so instead. And I'm very, very sorry that I said that or I did that or whatever." At a really awkward situation, bad situation in one of my first churches, where there was a group of people who had just turned against me. And it was very, very painful to go, you know, to do the things that I needed to do for the rest of the congregation. But there was a point at which I thought, I know when these things started to go wrong. And here's what I did, and I need to deal with this. There had, you know, I'd planted a seed of frustration and anger and that kind of thing, and I just kind of glossed it over and let it fly. And so there came a time when I was able to stand up in front of the congregation and say, "This is what I did, and I very much apologize. It was the wrong thing to do, and I'm very sorry. If I had it to do over again, I would do thus and so." And that changed the tenor of the situation in the congregation. It really helped. That was a big, scary thing to do, let me tell you. if it didn't make it better, it was going to make it a lot worse.
I think that keeps people from being able to address that, is that fear. I mean, so much of what you do is your willingness to speak in public and to take it on and not let that fear change or not allow things to change.
We set a good example also for other people when we're willing to apologize. And I mean really apologize, not just not just a half-hearted so what, you know, kind of apology, or okay, I'm sorry, you know. That doesn't do it. We've seen politicians do that all the time, and Me Too guys do that all the time, and it doesn't work. It doesn't make the situation anything but worse.
No, I don't think you get credit for apologizing if it's only because you got caught.
Yes, I agree. There has to be some remorse in there somewhere.
I would like to remind folks that you're tuned to KMUN, and it's Talking Story. I'm your host, Lynn Hadley. And we're here today with Kit Ketchum, who has served her community in many parts of the country in many capacities, and we're thrilled to have her with us today. And maybe we'll take things in a new direction.
Sure.
You have been retired now for how long?
About 6 months.
6 months. And what's that been like?
It you know, it's incredibly freeing to wake up in the morning and think, I could stay in bed or I could get up. What shall I do? I don't have to be anywhere this morning. I don't think I've ever really had that freedom. Maybe as a teacher, sometimes I had it in the summertime. But there was, with a kid at home, you'll always have something to do. So that's been one thing. But the other thing, a couple of other things that I have just loved about retirement is that I mentioned this, I think, when we were talking earlier about how wonderful it is to have friends that I have, that I can just have as personal friends, you know, friends that I'm not responsible to in some professional way, but only as a personal friend. You know, I would do the kinds of things that, I mean, I might do, listen to you or listen to somebody and ask the pastoral questions or something like that, but I'm not doing it because you're my parishioner. I'm doing it because I love you and you are my friend, you know, and there's a difference, you know, when you're a minister, you have to be really careful about making close friends with people in the congregation, because there are little jealousies and things like that. So I learned to differentiate between personal friends, people that I only knew outside of the congregation, and professional friends who these were people that I served in the congregation or in the classroom or, you know, that kind of thing. So that has been one of the most wonderful things. And I just think, this is so exciting to have all these friends that I know just because I know them, you know, it's not somebody I've worked for, you know, and that's a really lovely thing. So that was one thing, and I can't remember what the other thing was, but yeah.
But you've got plenty of time to remember now.
Oh, well, and I just thought of it, and it has, you know, we were talking about it earlier. I'm having a chance to learn things that I never would have dreamed of ever learning, you know, like I'm going to be in the programming class here and learn how to do that. How exciting is that? That's something totally new to me, but it's something that I can use my own wealth of knowledge about a particular genre of music and offer it, you know. I kind of have a title for my program.
Well, it sounds like you've been thinking about
this. I really have been thinking about this. I have a blog, and it is named, the name of the blog is Ms. Kitty's Saloon and Roadshow. And I thought, why couldn't I? This is a long title. I'd probably have to do something else with it. But Ms. Kitty's Saloon and Radio Show. Does it have a ring to it or what?
It does. Our studio audience approves.
Anyway, I'm just thrilled to be able to do that kind of thing, you know? Just really thrilled to. The other thing is, that we also talked about this. When you get to be an old woman, I'm 77. When you get to be, and this, I'm only an older woman, okay? But when you get to be our age, I don't know how old you are, Lynn, but I'm older than you are, I think. Anyway, but you kind of struggle with this idea of nobody notices me anymore. Nobody, you know, people, my word doesn't have the weight it used to. For example, when I was in a classroom or, you know, in the pulpit or whatever, but I want to speak my mind. I want to say what I know how to say and be useful. And some, I always want to be useful.
What sort of social commentary indicates that older women, particularly older women on their own, I think, don't seem to register on the scope? That invisibility is just like, why is that?
I think it's getting better. Thank you, Jane Fonda. Thank you, Meryl Streep. Thank you for, you know, thank you, Helen Mirren, and, you know, people like that. And also our male friends, our male colleagues are realizing that, you know, that we maybe aren't the little mousy person that we were when they were married to us or whatever, you know. Society puts a lot of loads on women, and as we get older and we get freer and we are not, say, married to the same partner, or we are single again or whatever, we don't have children to raise, heck, we can do a whole lot of stuff, you know. I am woman. Hear me roar.
Roar indeed.
It's so fun. And I don't feel like we're as criticizable at this age as we used to be. You know, we are the grannies. We know what we're talking about.
That life experience comes in handy.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Anyway, boy, are we ever all over the map in this conversation.
And I was just going to ask about the duties. Speaking of going to something totally different, mm-hmm. the duties as in serving a congregation. It's very emotional. I mean, you're a part of people's you know, intimate parts of people's lives.
Yeah. And you know a lot. You have to be very careful with what you know. Confidentiality is a really big deal. But as we were talking over our tea and coffee, or tea, or whatever you had, coffee, I guess you had coffee. There are times in those interactions with those folks you are serving that are very, very moving. And but times when you have to think, okay, this person has died. I have to be here for the family. I can't let my own personal connection to this person swamp me in grief so that I can't deal with their needs. So in a situation like that, I'll just tell you a little story. When I was on Whidbey Island and I got a phone call from the sheriff's department one morning, pretty early in the morning, 8 o'clock or something like that. And he said, I'm down here at such and such a place, and the daughter of this woman just walked in to her mom's home thinking she was going to take her out for breakfast and found her dead on the floor. She said, and he said, can you come down? Well, I knew who it was then when he told me the name, and I went down, and this woman was one of my favorite people in that congregation. It just blew me out of the water, and to go down and minister to her daughter and be there for her daughter and say, we're going to be able to do this. You know, here's the first thing that we need to do, the second thing we need to do right now, and let's, you know, what do you need? What, you know, what can I help you with? That kind of thing. And we just kind of, her other daughters came. She had four daughters, and three of them lived in that community, and they came down, and we had a little hug circle, and, you know, just made it through, and mortuary came and got the body, and it was like, and I went home and cried. Mm-hmm. I went home and cried, but that was not the place and time for me to cry. It was the place and time for the girls to cry. It was adult daughters.
To be that support there.
Yeah. Your presence is more important sometimes than anything you can ever say.
And which leads me to, it will be what it will be.
My motto of living.
I will do what I can with what I have for as long as I can.
Or as long as I have. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. For as long as I have. And that came to you.
Yeah. I was feeling, you know, when I've had my own little health problems here and there, you know, and it makes you think about your own mortality. And I have helped people die. I know people who are dying right now. And I think, okay, Kit, you're in the mix. You know, you're going to be taking that long slide here yourself sometime. What can you do with your life between now and whenever that happens? And I said, well, can I change the way the world looks? Not much, only, you know, in little bits and pieces. But I promise myself that I will do what I can with what I've got for as long as I have.
Well, Kit Ketchum, we are grateful for having you here today on Talking Story. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you. It's really been a blast. Thank you.